listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 166.1. Craig, how are you this week?
Better than I was a few minutes ago. We had a minor podcasting snafu here that we've gracefully recovered from and are ready to move forward. So 166 episodes, Dave, and we still don't get this right about half the time. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, it just shows that this is not as easy as it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm doing good. Been trucking along, work stuff all is going well. Everything is, no major disasters and kind of everything is going up and to the right. So it's going pretty good. How about yourself?
Well, it's been like crazy busy with all of the stuff that I'm trying to get done before MicroConf, because MicroConf Growth happens next week. I'm leaving on Saturday.
Right.
And I'm looking forward to seriously nerding out on Saturday. I'm getting together with some folks at MicroConf, and guess what we're going to do? And it is not gambling. If you guess gambling, you're wrong.
In Vegas, I have some other guesses that are not PG-13, but I'm guessing that's not it if you're going to be nerding out about it.
No. I'm married. I have three kids. So, yeah, none of those guesses are likely to be true. So,
You're going to be doing website teardowns or...
No. I'm not even going to do that. I'm going to be playing Dungeons & Dragons on Saturday.
Whoa. That is extreme.
Yes, I'm gonna let my nerd flag fly here. I've been a big D&D fan since I was about 12. And, you know, there was long periods where I didn't do anything and then periods where I did it a lot. Now I've got, like, my whole family's into it. I'm the dungeon master right now. All three of my girls and my wife, we all play on Sundays.
Awesome. Yes,
this is, like, an amazing family bonding thing. And my kids really enjoy it, like, you know, one of my daughters, she's done after a couple hours. She's like, ugh, okay, Dad, I'm ready to do something else now. But she's always pretty excited to play. So it's been a fun experience for them to do the role-playing thing and get into the monsters, and then they see the pictures, and they're like, ooh, what are we fighting now? Ooh, what did we find? You know,
yeah.
Do we have to talk our way out of this? Should we, like, draw our swords and start shooting? I'm like, okay.
No, it's great. I mean, it beats the hell out of just vegging out in front of the TV, right? I mean, like, these board games are fantastic for development and learning and life skills and stuff like that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And of course, for me, I have a myriad of a variety of voices that I like to use. And so I have to bust all of them out every time we're doing role playing. They encounter a new storekeeper and I'm like, okay, let's see. Is this one Scottish? Is this one Irish? Should I make them British?
Nice.
Should I, you know, do I make them evil sounding? And mm-hmm. Yeah, so I have a lot of fun with this. Although at some point, you know, some of the voices I choose, you know, they want to have this long dialogue and then my throat is like,
right.
And I'm struggling to come up with information. I am not the best DM by any stretch of the imagination, but since they've never played, they have no idea how bad I am. So that's great.
I've never played Dungeons and Dragons, but we play Catan as a family.
Settlers of Catan. Yes.
Yeah. It's absolutely fantastic. And it is truly like an all ages thing. Like, our kids are 6 and 8 and they both beat my wife and I regularly. I think my son, who's 6, has won the most times out of anyone in the family. I won the first time this past week and we've been playing for like 3 or 4 months. So it's like, totally all ages, kind of thing. Super cool.
Nice. You know, I have a copy of that. We bought it ages ago. We played it, I think, once when I was looking at trying to make an iOS version of that before they actually came out with their own. And it took a long time, and it was the first time we'd ever played. So I didn't really think, oh, yeah, man, this is the game I should be, like, introducing to my kids. Because doesn't it take, like, a fair amount of time to play?
Yeah, I mean, it takes, like, 2 or 3 hours. But it's the kind of game where, like, you can start and play at like a pretty basic level. And then they have like several advanced levels and add-ons to it and stuff like that. So for us, like right now, even when our friends come over and we play like the basic level just because we're all still kind of learning the strategy and stuff. But you can do like total like freestyle advanced mode and it's totally crazy. So I think it kind of grows with you. Yeah.
Nice. That sounds like a lot of fun. I will have to bust that back out with the family yeah. here pretty soon when they get tired of Dungeons and Dragons. But so far, it's been our Sunday morning tradition here. We have our pancake breakfast and then bust out D&D for a few hours. And then usually that's followed by a trip to Costco by my wife and I. So there's the Road and Boss Sunday agenda for you right there.
If you have time, right? What movie was it? I think we're going to go to Bath and Body Works or Bed Bath & Beyond, if we have time. I don't know. Like one of those, it's terrible, terrible illusion there.
yes.
So yeah, man. So MicroConf, I'll be very anxious to see how good the MicroConf live recording is this year, Dave. I hope
so will I.
Hope it's better than years past, but I think we'll pass it on to folks anyway, so they can kind of take in the energy and the spirit of things and the lessons that everyone's learning. One of these years we'll get it absolutely right, but we haven't done it so far, right?
Yeah, well, the opportunities are always there, but the locations are the biggest struggle, especially when you're inside the Tropicana. There aren't a lot of like rooms where you can put 8 people in and it's more or less quiet, because Vegas is all about constant stimulation. So you just have to find a place where the stimulation isn't dialed up to like 11.
Yeah.
And that is the challenge. There are some places, and the weather has cooperated some years, and we've had better opportunities some years than we've had others. So I don't know what this year is going to be like. I don't know where they're going to have us inside at the Trop, but I'll try to work something out. I will do my best.
Nice. Nice. So what's new in the world of Recapture?
Well, we are on the cusp of something very exciting. So this past week, I just launched Recapture for WooCommerce and for Easy Digital Downloads.
Ooh.
And they got, and here's the real shocking part of that. Like, that's not that shocking. You know, my developer's been kicking ass and taking names here for weeks, and we just got that done. And we went back and forth. I installed it on my various plugin sites and tested it and yada, yada. But now I got it into the WordPress repository. Guess how long the turnaround was on that?
12 hours.
Close. One of them was, technically it's less than a business day, but it was over a weekend. So I submitted it like Friday, got it in like Sunday afternoon.
Wow.
And then the next one I submitted it, because they only let you do one at a time. I submitted the second one as soon as I found the first one, because you have to go through this whole process of checking it in through SVN and all this stuff. And then once that's in there, then they let you do another one. So I did all that. Pushed in the other one. That one was approved in less than 6 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. I was shocked. Shocked. I mean, the plugin team is kicking ass right now. So if you're looking to submit a WordPress plugin, I'd say do it now.
And compared to the time you waited for Shopify too, right? Wasn't that a month or something gut wrenching? Yeah.
Well, it was painful and it was long. I don't even remember how long it was. It was weeks. Yeah. It was measured in weeks. So yeah, this was a big difference.
Nice.
Anyway, so we got that. That's all. I got that released this last week. I did all the marketing stuff for it. And so now I'm like ready to do some promotion. I'm not ready just yet, because we need to do like a pricing switch in order before I do that, because I want everybody on the value-based pricing, not our current email-based pricing. So that's just a switch we have to flip, and I have to coordinate with Mike to get that right. Yep. But the other thing that we were really excited about is that I was just talking with Jordan Gall from Cart Hook, and we are going to be a first class integration inside of the Cart Hook checkout experience. So nice. You can't just use any old abandoned cart app if you're using Cart Hook. You've got to use one of the ones that are approved for them, because they have to put the scripts on the checkout pages, and Shopify doesn't put the script on the checkout page, and Shopify doesn't control this page. So you've got to be in their store. So we've like been working on this for quite a while now. And I'm excited to say that we are literally 2 to 3 weeks from having this ready to launch. Like, we've finished the integration. We're going back and forth. We're honing the onboarding experience and finishing up the last bit of things that makes this like a 3-click integration. So as soon as this is all done, they're going to announce that they're shutting down the Cart Hook abandoned cart recovery stuff. And then we're going to start migration.
Nice.
So I'm
huge. I mean, it's a really popular platform now, right?
It is. Lots of people are using it, and they're getting like the recovery stuff for free. So this is like, it's a potential big deal for recapture. I don't know what it's going to work out to be. And, you know, Jordan doesn't really either, but we're excited to see kind of where it goes. So we're on the verge of, you know, going through the public announcement with his customers. I mean, it's not exactly a secret at this point, which is why I'm okay talking about it here. But yeah, we're, you know, just dotting I's and crossing T's right now. It's mostly a done deal, and yeah, we're on board with it and hammering forward, and it's literally a matter of time before it happens at this point.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. You mentioned that they'll be getting it for free. The, if a customer is a cart hook checkout customer, then they'll get abandoned cart for free. Is that right?
That's the way he has his setup right now. So they had two products. They had the cross sell upsell then they had the recovery. So he made the recovery free as a bonus of getting on. And so now they're saying we're shutting down the recovery. So they're going to migrate to recapture, but their recovery, like they stopped working on it.
Years. Yeah. Yeah.
Not years, but like 18 months, almost 2 years ago. Mm. They've added nothing to it. People are like, hey, can you do this? And they're like, yeah, no.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just not the direction they're focused right now.
It's not. And you know, that's a tough thing to say to your customers, but you know, I admire Jordan for putting it down and saying, yeah, this is where we're headed. We're doing this thing. It's a bigger opportunity. We can do a better job at this. There's a lot of people to do this other thing. And, you know, I'm thrilled that, you know, Jordan and I were able to work something out and we're talking about this because he knows that we're putting a lot of energy and time into recapture and we've got more features than he does and we've got a better editor than he does. And, you know, it's not like a knock on Carthook. It was built in 2015, but they just went a different direction. And, you know, people want a tool that somebody's actually actively maintaining, and we're doing that. Mm-hmm. So they're going to get what they want. So his customers get something they want. We get something we want, which is more customers.
More on customers.
So yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a win-win. You know, the only question is, you know, how many of the customers they're actually going to convert to paid versus free, but they're already paying a pretty big nut for Carthook. So, you know, paying for mine on top of that when I'm bringing back revenue into their platform it's an easy sell. So
yeah,
I'm hoping that means that there's a pretty high conversion rate.
Awesome, man. Well, that's all, it's all very exciting. All those integrations and that one in particular, I mean, all is just more eyeballs on recapture coming in the door and hopefully converting, right? That's awesome.
Yes. Yes. So hopefully in about 3 weeks, I'll have some starting good news on that. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. You know, if nothing else, I would imagine it's more feedback, more data, more installs, and you getting information about what's on people's sites and how they're using it and stuff like that to continue to hone your kind of product market fit.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to get that at the very least, but yeah, we'll see how it goes. We'll see.
Nice. Nice. From our end update with Castos, I guess we're, I talked about, we released our feedback hub. So we're using, feature upvote to collect feedback from plugin users and, you know, paying hosting customers. And we already released a feature that was recommended by a user and upvoted and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So we've kind of followed the whole process from they submitted a suggestion and then we shipped the feature late last week. So it's really cool to see, you know, that whole kind of life cycle of an idea all the way to implementation and to be able to tell our customers, hey, we're listening. You know, when you say jump, we say how high and we go build it. And it really is cool. I mean, it takes a lot of the guesswork out of like, what should we build next? Because now we just look at our board and say, this is the feature that everybody wants. For the most part, we should just go build this. I still have my own kind of thoughts about some things that that I think we need. But some of the things are like, we need this internally. You know, we need unit testing. We need a native importer inside of the WordPress plugin so I don't have to go into people's sites and import their stuff anymore and stuff like that. So some of the tools are things that we're building to make the experience better and conversions higher and stuff like that. But a lot of the stuff that we're building now is just stuff that our customers are saying this is valuable either for them staying as a customer or becoming a customer or paying more or getting more value. So it's really cool to see it kind of come to life.
Yeah. The boards like that are really awesome. And you know, what was it? User Voice. When they used to have a free tool, I integrated that in with one of the sites that I had done. I think it was Cronless. And it was really interesting to find out what everybody wanted to say about that. Like if you have enough customers, this really works pretty well. Mm-hmm. You still get a fair amount of noise on it, but at least you see the really important stuff bubble to the top. And that's what, you know, that's what I always wanted, was to find out what was the thing that the pissed off the most people, or would be the most valuable to the most number of people.
Yeah.
And that really helps get you there. So that's cool that Steve McLeod has got that integrated for you, and you're getting some value out of it. But yeah, I wish I had something like that with Recapture. I just don't have quite enough paying users to really get them integrated in to do that. I mean, maybe I do. You know, I've never thought about integrating that, because the free users are going to probably come in there and dominate and say these things. And, you know, it's hard to, you don't get to filter out that feedback to say, here's the paying users and here's the free users and here's what they vote on, because it's really the paying users you care about.
Yep.
Like we've talked about in previous episodes. So if you get all this stuff from these free users that say, hey, you know, this thing should be doing my taxes, you're like, I'm not a tax software. What the hell are you talking about?
No, I mean, that's spot on. Currently our highest voted feature is like a plugin feature. And I'm like, yeah, I hear you. Like, that's cool. And that would be neat and stuff. And we probably will build some version of that. But kind of going in that direction certainly helps, and kind of, I mean, just at least letting people know, hey, we're listening. We might not be able to do exactly what you're asking for, but we're going in the right direction. Is cool. So
it does give the customers the sense of, hey, you know, you're listening to what I have to say. And then when you mark it off on the board, they're like, hey, you are actually doing what I'm suggesting. This is cool.
Yeah. And it brings us beautifully into what we're talking about this week, which is, I guess more on a personal level, but kind of dealing with and processing feedback in a way that doesn't trigger like a stress response. So this is a blog post from the wonderful folks at Trello. Talking about how to accept and process and make productive use of feedback at work.
Yes. And this is, I mean,
this is fucking hard.
This is really fucking hard. Yeah. And it's not just been like, I've been consciously trying to work on this in one form or another for, I don't know. I want to say it's been, well, I won't say that I've been that conscious of my own behavior, but I'll say since I've been about 30, I've been more conscientious about how what I say affects other people and how to try to build consensus and try to provide useful information without, you know, pissing other people off. Because that's really what it does, right? So if you throw out criticism and that criticism is directed in a way that gets overly personal or in a way that can be construed as an attack, then people shut down and they just don't want to listen to what you have to say. So as a consultant, I've had to spend a lot of time figuring out that delicate balance of, all right, they want this information. Here's what I think about this information. And here's what they need to know about that information. And here's how I have to walk a line so I don't freak them out. Like that sort of thinking has sort of permeated my actions, I'd say, for the last couple of decades. But even with that said, I still suck at this. I just the other day had something with my staff. So I have a perfect example of how this still backfires on you. So if you've ever received emails from me, my emails are famously short, unless it's like a really big question that you're asking, and then they will be like unbelievably long. And those are the two extremes of my emails. They're really short or they're unbelievably long. And unfortunately, if I'm really busy and somebody sends me a question and I just give them a quick answer, they get the short version. And if they're not used to communicating with me, then they're like, oh my God, did I just do something wrong? Are you mad at me? Like I've had this feedback specifically with two people that work for me, and I'm not mad at them. I'm just very short. I'm very direct and I'm very short. And so there's always a conversation that I have to have periodically about, yes, I, you know, apologize for being so short. I was very busy with other things. I didn't mean to make it sound like I was angry with you, but here's what was going on in my head. So then I had to type the unbelievably long version of the email, which I didn't really have time to do before. But, you know, I had to explain this because there was definitely a misunderstanding of how I delivered my message. And it completely derailed them to one, you know, the one guy who's one of my new hires. He thought that I was like completely unhappy with how he was doing and where he was at. And all I was trying to say in the email was just this brief thing of, hey, you know, you're pretty much where I expect you to be at. I just wanted to kind of find out where you think you're at. And all he heard was, you're not, that I was saying to him, you're not as far as I think you should be right now. What the hell is wrong? Yeah. That's what he heard, because the question was worded in a way that's very short. And that, yeah, that's just, that's part of my communication style. And I'm very aware of it. It still gets me into trouble. I still have to spend time, like, walking things back and massaging my statements. And sometimes I'll type out an entire email and I'll go, no, that's too fucking blunt. I can't say that. and with some people I can, like, I work with this other guy and my freelance client, we've been working together since 2007, and he's as blunt and as direct as I am. And so, you know, we just totally dig into each other and neither of us really takes it that personally. I mean, unless we're like super stressed out, and then sometimes we can't. But even then, you know, for the most part, I'm just used to that style of communication because he's the guy I like spend the most time talking to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have to remember that when I go to other people, I can't talk like that. And this whole feedback article is very critical to remember this stuff and to understand this stuff, because every single interaction you're doing, whether it's with partners, whether it's with potential customers, whether it's with people that work for you, all of it applies. And you've got to think about how your message is being interpreted on the other side and by who and in what context and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. I think that there's definitely the two sides to it. Is one, kind of like you're talking about, and I think about a lot, especially in a remote environment, is how do I communicate with our team? And, you know, the language and the formats, email and Slack and video calls and voice calls and all this kind of stuff. Like, how can, if I'm going to give feedback, what's the medium? Is an email or a screencast or something like that a better way to communicate what I'm trying to show? But I think the other part of that is, you as whatever, a team member, whether you're the boss or you're the, you know, the person kind of doing, more of the work and receiving the feedback. It's how do you receive the feedback in a not negative way. I don't know if positive way is the right term, but yeah, in a positive way, to where you're not stressed, you're not defensive, you're not upset and all these kind of things. And I think this is, they're both really important to think about, but in particular to being on the receiving end of it. The first thing that the article in Charlotte talks about is keeping an open mind about receiving feedback, and thinking about how what you're doing can be improved and the perspective of the person that's coming to you with this feedback is, because yeah, everyone's got, like you were talking about, their own kind of way of communicating and where they're coming from in the kind of sphere of work that you're doing. And so I think a big part of it is just realizing where someone's coming from when they're giving you a piece of feedback, and kind of putting that into context with what they're saying and what they're really trying to get out of the conversation, you know?
Yeah. And the second point that is made in the article here, and this one is one that I sometimes admittedly have trouble with, especially if I'm triggered emotionally, but you don't want to respond right away. And it says, take a few seconds to really process the feedback. I would go so far as to say, take as long as you need to process the mm-hmm, feedback. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, when I get a negative review on WordPress.org for the plugins, derails me. Well, it used to derail me for several days. Now it only sort of throws me for a loop for 24 hours. And now that I know that, what I do is I will type up a response right away because I just can't let it sit. Like if I let it sit, it just stews in my mind and I can't stop thinking about it. But if I make a reply, then my brain can sort of let it go. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I used to just type up the reply right then and there and click send and then you're done. You know, you can't edit it after an hour, so you're stuck with it. And then in the first couple of years, I realized my feedback in some ways got pretty harsh. I know, imagine me being harsh and blunt, right?
To negative feedback, right?
right. So, and then eventually I realized that that wasn't working. And then I learned some better ways to deal with that. And the thing that I found was the most effective was to write the review or write the response to the review right away, but don't put it up on WordPress.org. Like, I wrote my whole little thing. Maybe I put it in a draft email to myself, or maybe I'll put it in a little text document or whatever. I'll draft it and I'll leave it for 24 hours. And then I'll go back and reread it with a cooler head and then realize which parts sound blunt, which parts sound angry, which parts could be improved. And that gives me a chance to really turn it into a response instead of a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of those things that as Buddhists, you're taught the difference between a response and a reaction. A response is a choice. A reaction is like a condition that your brain just automatically clicks into without you thinking about it.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time we're just reacting, but you really want to, you want to respond so that you can assess something rationally and logically. You know, there's going to be some emotion in it, but at least you can put the right level of emotion in it at a point. Or maybe you can just make it flat and even and without emotion at all, whatever you want. But you get the choice, right? If you don't react, you get the chance to respond. That's the way I always like to think of it.
Yeah, I think that ties into the next point is to make sure you understand the feedback. And in the example of like a WordPress.org post where they make a post and you get it 3 hours later and then write back 12 hours later, it's a little different than like a phone call or a Slack conversation or something like that. But I think it is important to say, like, do you understand exactly what someone is trying to say and like what the desired outcome is? Why didn't they like the plugin? And start like, what is it? Like the five whys or the six whys, the Toyota thing?
Five. It's only like five.
The five whys, six sigma.
It's the 17 whys. We're coming up with it. It's almost 3.5 times better than the five whys. 17 whys.
Oh, no, it's tough to keep track of all these. So yeah, I mean, really like, what are they trying to do that they couldn't do? Or what are they hoping to get out of this experience? Whatever the feedback is. A lot of times what somebody says is not really what they want or what they don't want. So really try to understand exactly where they feel like you're coming up short or can be improved or whatever like that. Because a lot of times it's not as bad as it seems, you know, like the guy that you mentioned in your example, you know, like it's not that he felt like he was doing a crappy job. You were saying, hey, I think we're right on schedule. This is great. But he kind of misinterpreted it, I guess. So that's, I think that's a lot of times like when feedback is negative. I mean, sometimes people just suck, but a lot of times it's, you know, really nuanced and really understanding that is important.
Right. And I see this a lot more in my freelance gig where I'm interacting with other developers and somebody says, yeah, that just didn't work for me, Dave. And then I'm like, well, what was it that wasn't working? And then I dig into it and I'm like, oh, well, that thing over there that you say I didn't do right, that was something that I didn't do a very good job at either. And, you know, we can at least agree on that. But then I'm interpreting it maybe a different way and thinking that they just think all my work sucks. But, yeah, you know, it's usually one specific focus thing. And you ask those questions, you can find out what that is. When you're dealing with negative reviews and stuff like that, you don't really, you know, I usually put up something and I'll say, hey, it sounds like you're having a problem with this. Like if they're criticizing a feature or they're saying that we don't do certain things or it had a performance issue or whatever it was. So I'll throw out some basic things because a lot of the times they just really needed some support and they're just venting at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if you put it out there and say, hey, I'm not sure I totally understand what you're doing or what problem you're having, I would be happy to help you. It sounds like you ran into this. Here's a possible solution to that, but I'm just guessing here. If you tell me a little bit more, I'd be happy to dig into it. And, you know, maybe one or two times out of 10, they'll actually hit me back and say, oh, yeah, that's exactly what I had going on. Or, no, that's pretty close, but this is what I saw. And you can actually dig into the real issue and maybe get them over that hump and then they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But in order for you to be able to ask those questions, you've got to be at a point where you're not emotionally triggered by the whole thing. So you've got to have that space to be able to respond so that you can ask the questions. Because a lot of the time you're like, if you're, you know, really if emotionally upset by somebody's feedback, you're like, no, I didn't. Or you just get, you know,
piping
angry
off, yeah,
and defensive. Yeah. Yeah. And standoffish, or you just shut down and say nothing. You know, those things are tough. Those are tough places.
Yeah. Yeah.
That brings us to, I think, the next point, which is the important thing you have to figure out is this feedback something that is useful or is it just overly critical? And if it's useful, then you have to look at it from the perspective of you've just received a gift. You should be just like when you get a gift for your birthday or for the holidays, you know, you should be humble and gracious that somebody actually took the time to tell you about this. Because a lot of the time, if you're in customer service, people are just angry and they don't say anything to you and they walk out the door. It's the ones that actually tell you what's wrong and why they're angry that gives you a chance to fix it. So that's the gift right here. It gives you something that you can act upon. And it's hard for you to be appreciative and humble about receiving that sometimes. I know it really is for me. Like, I take a lot of stuff personally. So when somebody is attacking something that I'm in charge of or something that I've built, that really kind of hits me in an emotional spot that it's difficult for me to respond. But I've gotten better at it over the years to the point where I'm like, thank you so much for letting me know about this. I really appreciate you taking the time to let me know what was going on here, because now we can improve.
Yeah.
I'm sorry this didn't work out. You know, I mean, you can be gracious and humble about it and still, you know, if they're just saying you suck, you're an asshole. Okay. That's, you don't have to be humble and gracious about that.
Yeah.
You can be polite, which is to say something like, well, I'm sorry this didn't really work out for you here. I know that we're not a perfect fit for everybody, and I wish it could have worked out, but I do wish you the best of luck with your site.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's still not saying, you know, fuck you for calling me an asshole. It at least lets you leave it in a positive place, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You've acknowledged what they've had to say. You've heard it. Can't really act on that, but at least you know, leave it in a place that I guess it puts some closure on it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the way I kind of look at this is that the response, I don't know, David, is it the response or the reaction that I give to pieces of feedback like this are directly reflect the value of the feedback that I get from somebody. So if they're piping off and, you know, saying I'm a steaming pile of crap and that, you know, my app doesn't work at all, I'm probably just going to say, I'm sorry, it's not for you, and move on. If somebody says, hey, I ran into this bug where I tried to do this thing and it gave me this message and it really shouldn't work like that, it should work like this, I'm going to go, wow, that is really freaking great. Thank you for taking the time to put this in a constructive and positive way to where I can go do something with this. Because if you just said you're a steaming pile of crap, I'm going to say, oh, well, I got all these other people over here that I can go make happy. And you as a feedback giver are not going to get anything out of that. Me as the receiver are going to be like, that's just too bad. You know, this guy's just a hater. And nobody is going to be happy. But if you as the feedback giver are productive and constructive with the feedback you're giving, then the likelihood of you actually getting what you want in the end is really high relative to if you're not. So, I mean, that's kind of something that spans both sides of this is like, give good, productive, honest, helpful feedback, and you probably will get a better end result than if you are just a dick.
Yeah, I think this whole podcast could be summed up by saying, don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, yeah, I mean, we, you know, tying this back a little bit to the business. So at Castos, I mean, we have, I think we've learned a lot about how to deliver good customer service. I'll say that. And we do a lot better now than we did a couple months ago, and certainly than we did a year ago. And it is a lot of being constructive and trying to always be constructive and helpful and stuff like that. And it is a learned kind of experience, because people come in and they're upset and you have to very, very quickly go, I get that you're upset. Can you tell me exactly what's happening? Why you're not getting what you want? So we can help you. I mean, this is into support, not just feedback, like whatever with team or whatever. But I think it's just a little bit of practice. I think if you're not practiced at getting feedback and dealing with it in a constructive way, then it's going to be tough for you. But I mean, it's a nice article to talk about some ways that you can take and kind of implement how you're receiving feedback and make it positive and where it doesn't bum you out. So,
yeah, I mean, the feedback applies in support as much as it does in, you know, interactions with your developers or your staff, yeah, or your peers, all of it. It's the same sort of thing, just different flavors of it, really. Yeah. And, you know, the last point that their last 2 points on here that I think we want to make is, you know, when somebody actually gives you some constructive feedback, you want to make sure that you don't just let it go in one ear and out the other. You want to do something with it. Put it, you know, for me, I always say, look, we're putting it on our list of enhancements over here. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time that may end up being a bit of a black hole because they might ask for something that is just so left field, we're never going to do it, but maybe it would be useful. Like if everybody finally said, hey, we need a pink directory, you know, I might go, okay, well, if everybody wants pink to be the default color on the business directory plugin, I'll give you an option for the default color on this. Yeah. But if I can't, you know, I can't figure that out if I'm not tracking that information in some way. So that's why we put it in there. And then when other people come to say the same thing, we'll search and we keep track of it that way. So it's kind of like a poor man's feature upvote. But you have to be able to act on this. And if the customers don't hear you acting on this or see you following up, like, you know, a lot of times if somebody's really unhappy, I'll follow up and say, all right, we're going to offer you a refund on this because this hasn't lived up to your experience. And we can't really do what is you need us to do here. And I don't want you to leave with a negative experience on this. It's not a good fit. So here's your money back. You know, that's following up with a reaction. That's not necessarily doing exactly what they wanted because maybe they wanted something that was so crazy, we just can't do it. But I'm still following up with something that leaves the customer in a place where they understand that we're not just ignoring them. We're responding to their feedback and we're trying to do something productive and positive with it.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, Dave, the last point they have here is that there are people that are just haters and you can't let them get you down. And I think maybe that's the hardest part of all this is the people that are just negative and trolling and somehow get a kick out of making everyone else's life miserable. Those people exist. And I mean, in the world we live in, you gotta know you're going to run into those people and you gotta just do your best to say like, that sucks. This person is not the kind of person I want to be involved with in my business, in my life, and move on as best and fast you can. But, we're all going to run into that and it sucks. And there's not much you can do about it other than just not let it get you down as best you can.
Yep. Yeah. Is this the part where I should start singing Taylor Swift? I think for the benefit of all of our listeners, I'm going to not do that.
I think that might have saved the show. There you go.
Yeah. Haters going to hate. Just deal with it and move on.
Yep. For sure. So yeah, hope everyone enjoyed this article. We'll link to this blog post by Trello in the show notes. And yeah, folks are enjoying the show, which all we ask is to share it with someone that you think might enjoy it as well. If you have any questions or suggestions for us, shoot us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. And we'll see you next week with a guest interview, and then we'll have the podcast from MicroConf Live right after that. So stay tuned, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.